45 years ago today, a St. Louis landmark opened. I had a friend who was in town from the East Coast recently. It was his first time to St. Louis, and of course he wanted me to take him to a bunch of the St. Louis landmarks. And I took him to the Arch, and we went to Grant's Farm, and we went across the river to the Gateway Geyser, and we went to a couple of places on Washington Avenue. And then I took him over to the Del Mar Loop, and we walked up and down and looked at the Walk of Fame. And of course, towards the end, I had to take him into Blueberry Hill, the restaurant slash bar slash concert venue that Joe Edwards opened 45 years ago today. And he's got a celebration going on to that effect this evening. And so I've asked him to join me here today. Hi, Joe. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
Nice to talk to you. It's been a few years since I've had you on the show. And congratulations on 45 years.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. It's hard to even conceive of that time frame. I think I must have been minus 10 years old when I opened it.
We all were.
Yeah.
What were you doing before you opened Blueberry Hill?
Well, I went to Duke University and served a little Army time, and after that, I still didn't know what I wanted to do. I was substitute teaching in city schools and then decided to try to open a place where I felt comfortable programming the jukebox and unboxing a lot of pop culture memorabilia that I'd collected through the decades, and hope that people enjoy that kind of an atmosphere.
And it wasn't as big when you opened it then as it is now, right?
No, just two small storefronts that are still there. The main bar room, as we call it, and the dining room. It was being used as a warehouse just for storage at that time by the owner, the previous building owner. And the Loop was kind of in a decline, and I'm happy to say that it's come back. It's only taken 45 years, but it's back in one of the safest city streets in the United States.
Yeah, well, it came back quite a while ago, thanks to you, but at the time you got it, I'm guessing you got a bargain.
The rents were really low, and that's one reason, because I opened it on $10,500 of borrowed money from friends, and for them to have that confidence and take that risk was great, as do all the independent businesses, really, that operate in the Loop. They put their hearts and souls and their, you know, life savings into their businesses.
What else was there on the Loop in 1972?
And not a whole lot. I mean, there were businesses here, a couple of hardware stores, the Varsity Theater was still here, the Tivoli Theater was still here. There was one restaurant, a Chinese restaurant, and a few other things. And in the daytime, it didn't look all that bad, but in the evening, nobody really came.
Mm-hmm.
You know, roll a bowling ball down the street, you could get a parking spot anywhere. That type of thing. It was kind of dark and gloomy in a way, but its day had come because of the decline, as many cities and suburbans, you know, parts of cities had gone down through the decades around the country. And I'm just so grateful that it's back, because it really is. It's been designated one of the 10 great streets in America by the American Planning Association. And that was a number of years ago, and we've progressed a lot since then. So that's pretty neat that we have one of the great streets in America.
All right, but I'm curious, since we're talking about the beginning of Blueberry Hill 45 years ago today, you start this storefront restaurant and bar. You didn't have the concert venues in there yet. It was just a place for people to come in and eat and drink and look at your Pez dispensers.
That's right.
So how do you do marketing for a place like that where there's no walk-by traffic?
Just kind of word of mouth, really. And those first couple of years were really tricky, because people would come in and they would look around the area. And I almost went out of business three times in those first 2 years, because I literally banned two-thirds of the customers that were coming in, because they were ne'er-do-wells. They were not so great, either drug dealers or just rude people. And I wanted people to feel comfortable here, whether it's families or single women or single men or, you know, young kids, grandparents and all, and it kind of set a tone for the Loop. But I ran across some interesting people during those early years, that's for sure.
And you mentioned the jukebox. Is the original jukebox still in storage somewhere? Because now you've got a digital one, right?
Yeah, it is a digital one, because now there's several 100,000 selections. But that jukebox really helped make Blueberry Hill, and I programmed it with, I have a large record collection, and did still at that time 30,000 45 RPMs.
Wow.
That's why we're celebrating the 45th anniversary with a t-shirt that has 45, you know, years on it, because of the 45 RPM aspect.
Does it have one of the adapters in the middle?
On the graphic it doesn't, but those were very prominent at that time.
Yeah.
That's cool that you even know that. That's great.
I'm old.
Yeah, well, but it was that's what made it so amazing. People like actor John Goodman would bring his friends from Afton, and they would drive down to the Del Mar Loop and pump quarter after quarter in that jukebox and, you know, play music and play air guitar and really have a good time. And I religiously changed the selection every 2 weeks, except for the song Blueberry Hill. And that's what made it different than any other jukebox in the country. And it was, you know, named by Billboard magazine, Cashbox, even the BBC in England said it was the best jukebox in the world.
Now, many people don't know this about the jukebox business, but in the days when they did have actual vinyl records in, like, 72, what you're talking about, there were jukebox salespeople who would go around and refill these with whatever were the current hits of the day were. Some of them they were getting paid to put in there, and others were just the popular ones that had to go in there. You didn't have that. You did it yourself, right?
Yes, I did. I did. And I did keep current, too. The original jukebox, I programmed it with songs from 1951 through 1967 just to start it out with some of the greatest music ever recorded. But then I brought it up to current times and mixed it in with the older great rock songs and pop songs and R&B songs.
And for tonight, will it all be 1972 music in the jukebox?
No, tonight, all day today, actually, we're playing that first 100 song selection all throughout the day. And then tonight, there'll be a karaoke party in the Elvis Room at Blueberry Hill where people can sing whatever song they want up to the current day, or they could pick one of the ones from those days, and if they pick one of those, they get a free drink ticket, so a little incentive to have some of those fine old ones by James Brown, the Five Satins, the Everly Brothers, Chuck Berry, the Silhouettes, you know, Jerry Lee Lewis, Aretha Franklin, Otis Redding. It's just amazing the music our country has produced.
Yeah, you mentioned Chuck Berry. You were friends with him for a long time. How did that friendship start, and how did you convince him to come play regular gigs in your new restaurant?
It was one of the most unpredictable things in my life. I never would have predicted I would become best friends with Chuck Berry. But a slow trust built up, particularly starting in the 1980s. I met him for the first time in the mid-1960s after a concert, just as a fan, just saying, hey, great show. But in the 1980s, we met and talked, and somehow he really trusted me. He knew I would be honest with him, you know, should he do this kind of an interview, or should he do so-and-so? And he would always do what he wanted to do, obviously, but he would always ask my advice, and we would go see the Neville Brothers down at the old Mississippi Nights, or we would go to California and see where he did the Coca-Cola commercial at the Observatory type of thing. And I don't know, he was a very guarded man with friendships, so who knew for sure that it would ever happen, but it did, and I always tried to do right by him.
And you got him to do regular gigs in the Duck Room. He played there every month for
209 consecutive months.
Wow.
And no other super rock star has ever done that at any venue in the country. And that's pretty amazing. People came from all over the world to St. Louis to see him perform in that intimate setting, the 340 capacity setting of Blueberry Hill. They could come from Japan and Brazil and Europe. It was just amazing.
And before his body started kind of giving out on him, he was still touring and playing much bigger venues, wasn't he?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I mean, just a year before he stopped performing live at concerts, he was playing Russia, for example. I mean, going over to Europe and Asia. I mean, unbelievable. He loved performing live and connecting with fans.
Who were some of the other bands you got to play in the Duck Room when they were just starting out?
Well, the Lumineers played here before they became big, and that's more current than some of the older ones. But
yeah,
there a lot of people, Grandmaster Flash put a show here on here, Cheap Trick, Alanis Morissette, tons and tons of people. I should have a list where I could reel them off right away, but groups coming up right now, there's a rock group called Highly Suspect that sold out the Duck Room at Blueberry Hill. Then they moved to the Del Mar Hall and sold that out. Then they moved to the Pageant and sold that out. And that's what makes St. Louis such a great music city. And the Del Mar Loop, really the live music center of St. Louis at that level of of nurturing national bands and local bands.
And the nice thing for you is you've got a piece of that action at every level, Joe.
I have a piece of the action and all the risk.
Of course. But a band like that takes off, boom, you get them in three places. That's fantastic.
Oh, I know. It's so marvelous. It's so great.
I mentioned I brought this friend from out of town into Blueberry Hill. It was about a month ago, and we walked through, and he was amazed at all the memorabilia on the walls. But he was even more impressed by the photos of you with pretty much every famous person from the music world and beyond that are on those walls there. Do you get backstage access everywhere you go?
Not all the time, but usually. I mean, my own places, obviously.
Yep.
But I've never in a million years would have thought that I would meet three presidents. I never thought I'd meet one, let alone three. I never thought that I would have the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of the United States have dinner at Blueberry Hill. I never thought Stephen King, the great author, would have dinner for several hours, and I would be one-on-one with him in the Elvis room just talking to get away from the rest of the crowd. I have Joe Perry from Aerosmith to come in and spend a whole afternoon with his family and his wife, Billy, and their kids with Chuck Berry's family. For Lord, the modern-day great from New Zealand to come in to see Chuck and be at Blueberry Hill. All these things, I still pinch myself at the life I've been leading. And I guess all the hard work and just desire to create places where people can put their troubles behind them and have a couple hours of happiness, and it's kind of paid off.
Are you still involved in booking the bands?
I'm not as much anymore. I did for years, but it really takes so many hours to really spend time with the agencies and to keep up on what they're doing in Cincinnati or Boise, Idaho, and all, to get a feel for it that I don't. But I would book too much with my heart and lose money. So it's great that really, really good people are booking.
You mean you turn around and go, well, I like them.
Yeah, exactly.
When you were doing that, when that was part of the main job of what you were doing for Blueberry Hill, besides running the place, did you travel to go see a lot of other people and go, oh, we got to get these guys?
No, I really didn't have the time to do that, but I would read about them and listen to their music. And I would really support local bands a lot. I mean, a lot of the early, all the Elvis Room bookings in the early days were primarily St. Louis bands. And I still encourage that at all three places, really, to give exposure to the local great bands coming up, because there are really, really good musicians in St. Louis. And I think the rest of the country kind of doesn't think of us that way. But because we have so many genres of music with great musicians in them rather than just one. It's not just New Orleans jazz or Chicago blues. We have all of that, plus rock and roll and gospel and everything else.
I have a band, Joe.
Well, luckily I'm not the one booking it, so I can't say no.
I'll say yes.
That's a darn shame. You probably were going to get in, but Joe's not involved in that anymore.
That hurts.
Darn shame.
Why ruin 45 years?
Here's the thing you and I have in common, Dan. Neither of us will be playing at Blueberry Hill, and I don't even have a band.
Hey, Joe, I think you should kick it off tonight in the Elvis Room, singing a little karaoke to get everybody else.
Yeah, will you be doing that?
I don't know. I'm a little shy about singing myself, but anything can happen. This might be the first time for me to do that.
Let's talk about some of your other projects down there. Not just the three concert venues you mentioned, besides Blueberry Hill and Del Mar Hall and the Pageant, but you also opened up the Pinup Bowl in 2003. You got the Flamingo Bowl. That's down on Washington Avenue, not in the Loop. You got the Moonrise Hotel. You got the Peacock Loop Diner. I think that was the last time I saw you. I was having lunch in there and you stopped in.
Yep.
You have all these things, and you've kind of expanded the Del Mar Loop concept out of University City and across the line into St. Louis City, right?
Right. It's half in the city of St. Louis and half in the county right now. And it was so important for the safety and to reclaim the street to have it go all the way up to the Del Mar Loop Metrolink stop. And it's just been marvelous to see people walking up and down the street with baby strollers and or just families and people coming in town so they can take Metrolink from the airport and walk west and enjoy one of the most interesting streets in the country and all the independent shops and restaurants. And it takes a long time to do it in an organic way, but that's the best way to do it because it'll survive a long time. And I'm real proud of the Moonrise Hotel and the new Twilight Room that has opened not too recently, but just in the last year or two. In fact, if people have not been in the Loop in the last few years, it really would be worth coming down some, you know, weekend after or any time and take a look around at the new galleries that have opened, the new restaurants that have opened, and see all there is to be seen. And more is happening. People are investing in the area right now because of the Loop trolley that's about to open, hopefully in mid-November, and connect us with the Forest Park and the Missouri History Museum. And that's going to be really meaningful to St. Louis long-term.
I wanted to ask you about that because one day when I was filling in for McGraw, you and I talked, and it happened to be the morning of the groundbreaking for the trolley tracks there, and that was over 2 years ago, Joe.
Right.
Why is it taking so long?
Well, things are funny. It's like, why did the arch grounds take an additional 3 years, you know, for example? It's hard with all the paperwork that goes back and forth between government agencies and the project itself, but it's getting that close. I'm like you, or gosh, why is it taking that long? But it just does to make sure it's safe and constructed properly and all the tweaks are done to make sure it's smooth running and ready to run smoothly.
Plus, as we were discussing, it's not just one government agency. You got UCity, you got the county, you got the city of St. Louis, you got the Forest Park Commission, you got all these people who have to be involved. Anytime there's a meeting with more than two people, it's just going to take forever.
Oh, it does. Then you had MoDOT and the Federal Transit Administration.
Oh
my goodness.
Yeah.
I am meeting out.
I bet you are. All right, let's come back to something good. The Walk of Fame, which has, I think, about 160 people on it, which you started years ago, is going to have its newest inductee on September 19th. T-Bone Burnett, who people may know, won an Oscar for his soundtrack for the Jeff Bridges movie Crazy Heart. He's got a whole bunch of Grammys, is one of the most respected producers in the music world now. Do you have a personal connection to him?
Well, yeah, I've met him a few times. He stayed at the Moonrise Hotel a few times over the years, and I introduced him to Chuck Berry a few years ago, and we had some really good dinners. The man is talented beyond belief and very low-key person, very tall. Not that that is one thing or the other, but it's just he's really a talented person. He traveled with Bob Dylan's Rolling Thunder Review in the 70s. He had a bunch of his own albums out. He's won 13 Grammys and one Oscar. I mean, he was born in St. Louis. It's just one of the. That's one reason I started the St. Louis Walk of Fame, to let the rest of the country know, as well as all of us in St. Louis, some of the greatest people that have influenced culture on a national level. And it's kind of important to do that thing. Like, let's pat ourselves on the back, St. Louis, and then honor the people that have come from St. Louis.
Yep, and you see it when people are walking by there. I go down to the Tivoli quite often for press screenings of movies, and I see people walking down the street and stopping and looking down at one of the brass stars in the pavement there, and you can hear them sometimes going, I didn't know she was from St. Louis.
Yep. And the beautiful thing about the Walk of Fame in St. Louis, and it's real important to me, to have informative plaques, informational plaques, along with the star. I mean, I like the Hollywood Walk of Fame and all, but it you know, if you don't know the person, you don't know if it's a silent film star or a great director or a wonderful actress. So this way, you learn a little bit about the person and their St. Louis connection right then and there, where teachers can bring classrooms of kids down and get inspired. Like, gosh, that's a good role model. I could rise out of nothing and become like Josephine Baker. I could rise out of nothing and become like so-and-so. It's an important thing long-term.
Or maybe you can rise out of nothing and open up a place that stands to the test of time for 4.5 decades and then become the Duke of Del Mar and own half the damn streets. What are you doing next? I know the trolley is still on your mind, and you got to get that done. But what's the next Joe Edwards project? What are you going to build? What are you going to open? What's the plan?
Well, I have a couple of vacant buildings that I've purchased a little bit east of the pageant and all that I would like to renovate, and I don't have anything solid yet, but I'm starting to, things are starting to percolate in my brain. Like, I have, I think, one more idea of something fun and different that's not around right now that I'd like to do if I can pull it off, but that might take another year or year and a half.
Well, whatever it is, we'll keep an eye on it because, you know, you've been so successful for all these years. Tonight, celebrating 45 years with all those 45s in the jukebox at Blueberry Hill down in the Del Mar Loop. And here's the man behind all of it, Joe Edwards. Thanks for your time today, Joe.
Oh, thank you all very, very much.
My pleasure. I'm Paul Harris. This is the Big 550 KTRS.